Hi there, I'm Nihal and you're listening to the Rescue Tales podcast, the show dedicated to helping you settle your adopted rescue dog. In this episode, I chat with Amina Shazli about the changing perception of stray dogs in Egypt and why more people are opting to adopt rather than shop. Amina is the co-founder of Leaf Animals in Egypt, an organization that helps alleviate the pressure on rescue centers and individuals by helping them find forever homes for the animals in their care. Amina did her master's thesis on Egypt's Beledi dog, and Beledi is the term used to refer to strays in Arabic. Now, through her research, she found that these animals were once very highly regarded by ancient Egyptians and often even buried with them. She explains how the stigma of adopting Beledi dogs and cats is starting to die down slowly. Now, I'm half Egyptian and I lived in Egypt for 18 years, so I've seen firsthand how dreadful life can be for Egypt's stray dogs, with everything from sanctioned poisoning campaigns to pet abandonment and road accidents. Awareness and interest in animal welfare in Egypt is on the rise, and more people are choosing to adopt rather than shop. However, there's still an informational gap, and many people struggle to settle their adopted rescues. Now, I'm sure the work Amina and many others are doing in Egypt will change this over time. As always, I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you'd like us to cover any specific topics on the podcast, drop me an email at nihal@rescuetales.co. So hi, Amina, and welcome to Rescue Tales.
Hi, Nihal. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while because you have what I think is a really, really fascinating background, I'm going to let you tell the audience about because I'm really excited to talk about your master's thesis. But before we jump into that detail, just tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, where you live at the moment, and of course, we need to know who your dogs are as well.
So my name is Amina Al Shazli. I'm from Egypt. I live now on Crete in Greece. I have an adoption website based in Egypt to help homeless animals find homes in Egypt. And my dogs are Leah the Dachshund, Misa the Miniature Pinscher, and Pablo the Beledi.
Oh. I've seen your dogs. They're absolutely beautiful dogs. You did your master's thesis on the Beledi dog, and it was called a Historical Ecology of the Beledi Dog in Egypt. So let's define the Beledi dog for people who are not from Egypt. Tell us what a Beledi dog actually is.
Well, I think we would start first with the word Beledi and what it really means. In Arabic, Beledi literally means my country. But unfortunately, it's used to describe tacky, unwanted things like maybe Beledi clothes or Beledi dogs or Beledi dancing. It's used in different ways, but mostly, especially when we describe street animals, they're all Beledi, as in unwanted. So I chose to do my master's thesis about the Beledi dogs was because I had just adopted Pablo, my Beledi dog, and moved to Sweden, and we were asked to choose the topic. And I remember that thinking about Pablo, and I knew nothing about his breed, nothing about his temperament, nothing about his eating habits, nothing at all. I searched on the internet, there was nothing. So I thought, why not take this opportunity and try to learn more and try to tell others in my position about this beautiful breed, and to get more awareness for the Beledi dogs.
That's so comprehensive. I would love to link to your full paper in the show notes. Tell us a little bit about the lineage, maybe, of the Beledi dog.
In ancient Egypt, during these times, there was a lot of trading with other African countries, with other countries and other continents. There was a lot of breeding, and there was a lot of mummifying. And there wasn't just one breed. There were different breeds. Big breeds, small breeds, hunting breeds, working dogs. Then I believe, from what I've learned, that the Beledi dog is the sum of all those breeds from ancient Egypt, all packed into one. So the Beledi dog has a lot of different looks, different colors, different shapes, different sizes, different patterns.
one of the things that you talked about in your research, which I just found so interesting, was how highly ancient Egyptians regarded their dogs. So yeah. Tell us a little bit more about that, and also touch on the fact that they would be buried with their dogs as well, and why did they do that?
Yeah, if you go to any museum or any museum and other places where you'll find ancient things from ancient Egypt, you'll find a lot of dogs on the walls. And when I was studying, there's also a Professor Salima Ikram. She's an archaeologist who has done amazing studies on mummies, especially animal mummies that were buried and mummified either with their owners. They found one huge catacomb tomb with millions, around 7 million mummified animals. Dogs in ancient Egypt were highly, highly regarded as companion animals, not just working animals, you know. Yes, they did have them for hunting. They had them for to be shepherds, retrievers, but they also had them as companions, and they were buried with them sometimes just because they believed in the afterlife and they wanted their dogs with them in the afterlife.
So one of the things you also talked about was the perception of the Beledi dog in Egypt today. So, and in Egypt, you know, in other countries, they might refer to them just stray dogs, right? Street dogs, if you like. Yeah. So is the perception, do you think it's shifting? And what's driving that shift?
Well, around 2014, there wasn't a lot of shelters like we have now in Egypt, and people didn't really look at Beledi dogs. But then with the rise of social media in Egypt around this time, and very few people working in rescue and very few people trying to advocate for animal rights in Egypt, a bit by bit, it started changing, with some really intense animal abuse incidents happening at this time. Mm. I believe social media had the biggest impact on this shift in perception. It's been really slowly, gradually changing to the better, not to the best or what we hoped it would be, but it's happening. And this shift is really important because during my studies in 2016, the perception was really changing and reforming to more people adopting, more people looking at the dogs and actually seeing, you know, when something is always around you, you don't really see it. But then when someone starts mentioning it, you start like, oh, yeah, I see them. I see them on the streets now. And people start looking at them, whether they're sick or injured. They try to help them. They try to send them to shelters. And the thing is, with shelters in Egypt, they're not really shelters. They're more of rescue centers or organizations. Mm. And they focus on severely sick or severely injured animals, yeah, because at the end of the day, we can't really give shelter to the millions of street dogs or Beledi dogs in Egypt. So more people were opening rescue centers in Egypt, so more animals are being helped. So there's more content about them on Facebook, with pictures and stories of adoption stories and rescue stories and abuse stories and big incidents that would just stay in people's minds and remind them of the Beledi breed.
On that note, tell us more about Leaf Animals, what exactly Leaf Animals is about. And then I'd love to talk about why you changed your adoption application process, because I think that's really important. But tell us about why you set it up and the work that you do.
I really wanted to help animals without being in direct contact with them, because I think having to be a rescuer who daily rescues animals and sees sick animals or injured animals, I think this has a certain type of strength that isn't in everybody, and I don't think I had it. But I really wanted to help them in a way that I can, and actually can help them. So So I thought of why not create something like Pet Finder in Egypt, where people, instead of just going on different Facebook groups and looking for a certain dog or a certain breed or a certain size or a certain color or a certain coat length, you know, just like have them all in one place for to help people choose the right animal for themselves, and also for them to be showcased in a way that puts them in a good light, because usually rescue cases have really bad and graphic pictures on Facebook. So we created Leaf Animals and we launched last March. And since then we were able to home 25 animals in 4 months. Our adoption process is someone uploads the animal on the website and then someone sees the animal. They fill out the application they find on the animal's profile. And at the time we had a really short application where they just put their personal information, just some information about their home, and that's it. But then one day, I had 4 kittens returned just in one day. And I felt really responsible for this because it's my job to make sure that this is the right home for the animal. Because, yes, the animals can be rehomed, but it's not good for the animal to keep being rehomed every couple of months or every couple of years. So we had to make sure they're going to their actual forever home. So I got in touch with some rescuer friends, and they helped me think of how we need to reform the adoption. And this actually happened in exactly 2 days, because I really wanted to quickly change it because people are wanting to adopt all the time. Mm-hmm. And now the application is much longer with more open-ended questions, just to like give us insight on how this person thinks, what's the person's mentality, how they feel about spaying and neutering, how they feel about choke collars and prong collars for dogs, and just like a feel of how this person thinks about their adoption. Is it a quick decision or...
Yeah.
And actually, with this reform of the applications, and they became much longer. Some people sent us and they're like, this is a very long application and you're discouraging people from adopting. And I'm like, yeah, I want to discourage people who are not that ready to adopt from adopting. Because at the end of the day, if you're adopting, you are making a commitment and making a promise to this animal to keep them for over 10 years, depending on the breed and all that, you know. So it's just... Yes, I might be discouraging some people from adopting, but I'm also making sure the animal is going to the right home, to the person who is ready to spend 10 to 15 minutes filling out an adoption form, because they're going to be spending 10 to 15 years with this animal, you know?
I think it's great that you've done that, because I would have imagined that you've not only getting pushback from people, but I would imagine that you're probably adopting out maybe fewer animals as a result of doing that. And that's, I completely agree. Like you said, that's not a bad thing. When I adopted my dog Rosa, the application forms were taking me about an hour to fill out.
Wow.
And I could still think of other questions that they could have asked me to, you know, vet me even further. And I think people, and I was one of those people, I decided to adopt because I didn't want to buy a dog from a breeder. I wanted an adult dog. And I had these expectations in my mind about what it would be like when I brought my rescue dog home. And I knew that, you know, there would be an element of fear, and that fear might manifest in, you know, my dog just hiding, not wanting to engage, or it might manifest in my dog barking and growling. Like, fear will manifest, as I'm sure you know, in different ways. But I was not prepared with, you know, hour long application for, and some of them were interviews. Some of them called me and we did a phone interview, and I'd have to do an introduction video, and I had to video my home. All that was fine. But I think you're 100% right. I think it's an amazing thing to adopt an animal, first of all, absolutely amazing thing to do. But the sad reality is that somewhere between 7 and 20% of animals are sent back to shelters.
Yeah.
that are adopted. And that number, and I repeat this on every podcast interview, because I think it's just such an important statistic for us to think about. That does not include animals that are just abandoned. Like, people have adopted a dog and then realize, oh my God, it takes a lot more work than I thought, and they just throw them out.
Exactly.
So getting it right and understanding that you have to give the dog a level of support and that you are bringing in a new member of your family. What are some of the main challenges that you get people coming to you with?
The first thing people always ask about is potty training, and especially with older dogs who are expected to be potty trained. And potty training means different things to different people, you know? Like, for example, in my house, to me, potty trained means they'll just go to the balcony and do their thing. Some other person will define potty training as the dog only do their thing when they're out on the street, when I'm walking them. But this is something that everyone asks about, and I always make sure to let them know that even if a dog is potty trained in one home, it doesn't mean they're going to be potty trained in a new home, because different homes mean different rules, you know? And I try to explain to them as much as I can what it means to be potty trained, that you will have to be the one potty training them again, even if they are in their previous home. And another challenge I always find is training and the word no. Sometimes they send me, the dog is not listening to me, and the dog has separation anxiety. One time we had one person adopt a puppy, and they expected this puppy to not cry when they're left alone, to not have any accidents at home. And after a week of adoption, she was like, look, I can't keep up with the puppy. She cries when I leave her for a second on the couch because she can't jump. She has separation anxiety. And the thing is, the puppy did not have any separation anxiety. The puppy is a baby, you know? We just don't leave babies alone, especially in a new place. People are not really aware of what it means to have another soul, another baby in the home. You know, everyone prepares for having a child in the home. They are preparing for the first 9 months of just hearing about them being pregnant. They prepare for 9 months. They get all the supplies. They learn about everything and what it means to have a baby. But when people are adopting dogs or even cats, they do it on a whim because, you know, dogs are super cute and puppies are super cute. So they just see the animal and they're like, oh my God, I want to adopt this dog now. And they don't think much about the next 10 to 15 years. It's a really long commitment, a commitment that we need to work on daily. We need to every day wake up and choose to walk the dogs, feed the dogs, play with the dogs, enrich the dog's life, give them toys, give them stimulating toys, puzzles. It's a lot of things that people need to think about. And that's what I try to do with Leaf Animals, is that when someone fills out the adoption form, I send them an email with everything I know about having dogs. And I'm sure I don't know everything, that's for sure, you know, but as much as I can, give them everything I know, because I really want people to really think hard before making this big decision. We don't just get babies all of a sudden into our lives. We need to make sure that our lives are going to suit this new family member. And if it doesn't suit this new family member, it would be unfair to bring this family member into the home when I'm not ready, or when I don't have the time, or when I'm out at work for 12 hours or 8 hours daily and getting a puppy. Who's going to stay with that puppy, you know? So we really need to make sure that we're ready for this kind of commitment and responsibility and time and effort and patience and consistency and everything.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Puppies are very deceptive because they look so cute. But my mother has a dog, and she's had her since she was a puppy. And I remember when Lulu, her dog, was in the first few months, my mother would call me crying.
Yeah.
She was literally crying in tears because, you know, the teething problems, it was just non-stop. And yes, they are cute. Yes, they are adorable. but you have to really research and understand the level of commitment if you want to adopt a puppy. I would advise anyone just really think about it and speak to people who have had puppies and just ask them, what's it been like? And think about if you can commit to that. And with adult dogs, I think there's a lot of advantages of adopting an adult dog, especially because it's also a lot harder for them to be rehomed often because everyone wants the puppies, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And people also need to think that adopting a puppy is a 2-year commitment. They have the first year of just being puppies and then the teenage years. And this is all just like having a human kid, you know? There's the puppy phase, and then there's the teenage phase, and then there's when you have this nice adult that understands you and understands your relationship together. There's a lot of communication. And that's why I really like people who choose to adopt an older dog, because it means they have this kind of readiness that one needs when adopting an adult, you know? Yes, they do have some traumas or some history and background and learned behaviors from their previous lives or homes, but you still get this mature, understanding person.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think on that note, I wanted to just touch on something that was going back to your research. You talked about training, and I think there is a perception of Beledi or street dogs that they're not as intelligent as a Labrador, for instance, or whatever other breed. And there was something that really struck me, and I pulled out a comment from your research study where you asked people if they had dogs before and if the Beledi dog was any different. And one of the responses, she said, her dog has been the easiest to train. She's loyal, calm in the house, and she just knows what to do in every situation. I don't think I've ever had to take her to the vet for anything other than her vaccinations, fleeing and worming, and clipping her nails. And I read that and I thought, that's almost the case I have with my dog, Rosa.
Yeah.
I find she's really easy to train. But I think where people tend to go wrong with rescue specifically, and I'm keen to get your views on this and your observations, is they bring a rescue dog home and they don't, or any dog that you're bringing into a new home, and they don't give it time to settle, right?
Yeah.
So do you see this as a challenge that people sometimes don't realize that training has phases to it?
People bring in the dog, especially when it's an adult dog, they come into the house, they expect them to be settled right away. Because they see other people with their dogs and like going to the beach and living a fine life, you know, they seem like really nice dogs. But when they adopt their rescue dog, they're looking for a normal dog, you know, like they're waiting to find this really nice, cool, mature dog behaving very well. And they forget that dogs take a lot of time to settle in their homes. Like Rosa, your dog, you told me she took a lot of time to even enter the house and then coming out of the house and all that. We don't really think that dogs have a world of their own. She has her thoughts. She has her history. She has her background. She has so many things that make her perceive this new environment as a not so nice and comfy environment like you think. Because it's your home, you know? Mm. It's like, why aren't you comfortable in my home? I'm giving you everything you want. I'm giving you toys. I'm giving you food. Why aren't you listening to me? And then they start just labeling the dogs stubborn, disobedient, doesn't understand the word no. I keep saying no and they don't listen. But have you listened to your dog when he came into your house? You know, have you looked at his body language? Have you tried to just let them be? Imagine just going into a hotel and then everyone's just sitting right next to you. And are you enjoying your time at the hotel? Are you enjoying your time at the here, take some stuff. No, you want to go and settle down, relax, unpack your clothes, unpack your bag, look around, just start feeling comfortable first and then start making plans on what you're going to be doing in this new place, you know? And people just don't think about that and they expect a lot from a newcomer. And it's just like kids going to school, you know? If I find my kids' teachers coming to me and she's like, on the first day your kid came to school, he did not listen to me. Well, give him some time. If we are giving humans time to settle and if we're giving humans time to get comfortable, why aren't we doing the same with our dogs, especially rescue dogs, who, like I said earlier, have a world of their own, thoughts, ideas, behaviors, so many things.
Absolutely. And I think you said that beautifully. And just to touch on two of the points you made there, the first point is that we think, oh, you know, this dog was on the street or in a shelter, and we think, oh, we're bringing them into our wonderful homes, they should be grateful. Yeah. Whereas actually, that was its home. So we've brought it into this strange new environment. And I think the other point that you made, which is really important, is, are we listening to the dog? Are we thinking about their emotions and how they feel? I just really would love more people to take a step back and just reflect on the fact that these animals are highly intelligent, highly emotional. Like, the range of emotions a dog feels is just, it's incredible. Yeah. And we just treat them like they don't have any emotions sometimes. Exactly. You know?
There's a study that says an adult dog has the same intelligence or mental capacity as a three-year-old. That's a human 3 years old who understands, who thinks, who feels, who has their own individuality. And so we don't really look at dogs as who they really are. You know, like, I realized I didn't really answer your previous questions about training, and that Baladis are very trainable. And I think this is because they have the choice. They have a lot of choices that comes with their freedom on the street. They know what is what, you know. They get away from cars because they've seen other dogs get killed by cars. They stay away from humans because they've seen other dogs abused by humans, and so on, you know. So when a Baladi dog goes to a home, and after they've settled and all that, people start realizing, wow, these are amazing, intelligent dogs. My Pablo, my Baladi, who was just 2 months when my father found him, I had already had Leah, and she was 6 months old. Pablo was 2 months. She was not getting the potty training at all on the pad, at all. Pablo came with just one time getting a treat when he went on the pad. It didn't take any time. And Leah started following Pablo's footsteps and doing what he's doing, you know, so he was definitely the smarter in the room. And even though he was 2 months old when I adopted him, he still had a lot of history I didn't know about. Unlike Leah, who was born in a home with all her family, loved from day one, given food from day one, was provided with all her basic needs, you know, but this one came from the street. Yeah, he had his freedom and his mom and all that, but he did not understand what it means to live in a home, in a human home.
Those are some amazing points. I think people really do underestimate the intelligence and the savviness of these dogs. When I brought Rosa home, the main challenge I had was I couldn't get her out of the house because she was too scared to go back outside. She's too scared of the building, not the outdoors. She loves being outdoors. She understood, like, as soon as I put puppy pads, she had her space in, we have luckily a big balcony, and she knew that's where she would go. And then when I managed to get her out the house, she got it. As soon as she was calm enough, and this is the thing, is that an animal's not going to go, you know, do their business if they feel threatened. But as soon as she got out the house, I mean, it took, like, the second time I took her out, she got it. Because when we think back to the nature of, you know, the heritage of dogs and, you know, their descendant from wolves and how they behave in the den, they, you know, the mother will, it sounds a bit gross, but the mother will eat the feces and the urine to keep the den clean.
Exactly.
Because she's teaching the pups that you don't defecate in this area and leave it there. Your sleeping area must be clean.
Yeah,
interesting, like, when you observe dogs in nature, they just get it.
And what I love about your story with Rosa is that it took you around 7 to 8 weeks to get her where she is now. you know, and from 0 to 100 in 7-8 weeks, that's something other people don't really expect. They expect to get the dog, and the second they arrive home, they know where to potty, they know the word no, they understand everything, and the patience you had with Rosa and the time you gave her is exactly what all rescues really need. You know, they need the time, they need the space, they need to feel safe first and then be expected to behave a bit normally, because at the end of the day, she's still a rescue. She still has her story that we know nothing about, you know?
And I think you know, it was the patience that was key. The patience. And the other thing was, I just put myself, because I didn't have the expertise or experience. I had many animals over the course of my life. When I was in Egypt, I had 9 cats that I'd rescued off the street. Wow. I think if I lived there longer, I would probably have ended up with hundreds. But I didn't have experience with dogs. So when I brought her home and I was like, oh, like, she's too scared to come inside. She slept by the front door for the first, like, nearly a week.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my, I don't know what I'm like, what do I do? And I thought, have I made this huge mistake?
Yeah.
Am I in over? And I'm like, hold on, calm down. What would you want to happen to you if you were in her position right now?
Exactly.
And that was the one question. Of course, I started researching, speaking to professionals and everything, but there's no quick fixes. And that's why I started the podcast, because I think it can be a very lonely place when you adopt an animal and you do it with good intentions. And I think many first-time adopters fall into this problem, right? And they bring the dog home and then suddenly they're like, I don't know how to deal with this behavior. Like, this isn't like my friend's Labrador. Like, exactly. What do I do?
Yeah.
And then you kind of, I felt a little bit ashamed, if I'm really honest. And I'm like, I should know what to do and I don't know what to do. I would advise anyone struggling, just reach out for advice. As long as you're willing to be patient, kind, and give the dog the space and time it needs, you'll figure it out. Speak to the right professionals, and it will be fine. But just reach out for help.
Exactly. It's the same when I adopted Misa, my rescue miniature pincher. I had just moved here. I haven't been with my animals for over 4 months. And I really needed to feel some animals' presence in my life, you know. And just a week before I went back to Egypt to bring Leah, I saw this picture of a really cute miniature pincher puppy that was found on the streets here on Crete. Mm. And they were looking for a foster or forever home. So I messaged them and I told them, look, I'm going to Egypt bringing my dog. And as soon as I'm back, I'll get Misa. And Leah arrived, say, on a Tuesday. Misa arrived on Wednesday, just the next day. And I've told you before that after 2 years of having Misa, I don't want to say regret it, but I really want to say that I did not make the right choice for either me, Misa, or Leah, because I was just new to this place, new to this country. My dog was new to this place and this country, which is Leah. And then all of a sudden, I bring this rescue dog that I know nothing about. And I don't know if I'm actually ready to have 2 dogs and 2 cats. I didn't think of that. And I struggled a lot with Misa in the beginning. And because I had no experience of understanding dog body language, dog behavior, I just had dogs before and just did what I was told by other people in Egypt on what to potty train, which it was a lot of wrong things, you know, that I've learned before. So I contacted my current trainer, Emma, from Hound Charming. And all of a sudden, when I gave Misa everything she wanted, because now I understood how to communicate with dogs, even though I've had dogs all my life, I did not know how to communicate with dogs until 2 years ago. Actually, 1 year ago, when I started with my trainer, my force-free positive reinforcement trainer, because I had trainers before and I had dogs before, but it was never like this. I was told to be the dog's master. I was told to take the food from the dog when he's eating just because, just for him to understand that I'm the one who gives and takes the food. It's like, what? Why are you teaching me to be mean to my dog, you know? And even though sometimes I do say I regret adopting Misa, I would never, ever give her to anyone else in this world, because I know no one is going to think of her the way I'm thinking of her. No one will be giving her all this force-free life of no punishment, no yelling. I understand accidents happen. And it is difficult because Misa is not like Leah. Misa is really hyper, really reactive with dogs and cats. If she's off-leash, she'll never return unless we're inside the house or in an enclosed space, because she's really excited. And she learned to have this freedom, and she loves her freedom. If she feels like the leash is restricting her, she knows that if she bites it, it will tear and she'll get her freedom. And she's very smart. My trainer tells me Misa maybe doesn't have emotional intelligence and she's a bit emotionally insecure, but she's super smart and smarter than Leah, you know, who was who lived in a home all her life, lived with her family all her life, you know, unlike Misa. So I find it really interesting that rescues, even though they're a bit, I don't want to say difficult, they're a bit different than dogs who were born inside the home, they're super smart, and understand you, and only if you speak to them the way they will understand, in their language, in a way they accept and not afraid of.
Yeah. I have an important question for you. In hindsight, what questions would you have asked before adopting Misa, if you could go back in time?
I would have first given myself the time to learn my own routine in this new place and have my current resident dog learn the new routine in our new life together in this new country and new home. And then I would have just taken a lot of time to think if an extra dog is going to add to my life and not take from my life and from my current animal's life, you know. I would have definitely spoken to people with more than one dog, because even though I had Leah and Pablo together in Cairo, it's a lot different when living abroad, and it's a lot different with not knowing so many people in your area, you know. And like you said, it can get lonely, and it did get lonely because I didn't understand what to do. I would have really loved to just give myself and my family time before bringing this new dog, because if you have a dog that you're not happy with in the home, you will build resentment towards this animal. And this animal does not deserve to have this resentment coming towards them just for them being themselves. She's really being herself. And if she's really, and if herself is bothering me, then there's something wrong with me, not with her. Because at the end of the day, we are the ones responsible of the dogs. We're the ones who, if the dog behaves in a way I don't like, then there's something I'm doing wrong. Not because of her behavior or who she is. I'm the one doing something wrong. I'm the one who has control over her food, her space, her freedom, her movement, her health, her nutrition, everything. Dogs cannot do so many things without us. So it's our responsibility to make sure that our lives are ready to have new dogs in them, because if I'm not ready and if I did not have the same mindset of I'm adopting a dog and this is a life-changing decision that I cannot go back, I made the decision to adopt her, so I am responsible of keeping her till the day one of us dies,
mm.
you know, because it's my responsibility, even though it wasn't the right decision and even though it wasn't the right time, but we're here. So I have to keep my promise because this is what I made when I got her. I made her a promise to keep her forever, and I cannot just give her to someone else because she's not as cute as I thought she would be, or she's not as obedient as I thought she would be, or she doesn't behave the way I want her to behave. I chose her, then I have to choose her every day of her life, you know?
I'm very grateful to you for sharing that. And I think it takes a lot of reflection for one to be so self-critical. But I think it's also amazing that you are working with Emma McLean from Hound Charming. And I'm sure you've seen improvements. And I just want to make that point to make it clear to listeners that your dog's behavior is changing and these challenges are being worked on and you are seeing improvements. And the reason is that you made the right decision to go work with the right type of trainer to support you who actually understands the challenges that these dogs have.
Yeah, I would really say Emma changed my life. And any dog's life I will ever come in contact with from now. Because I took Pablo to a trainer. And if I had taken Misa to that same trainer in Egypt, she would be the most traumatized dog I've ever seen. But now, when we started with Emma, she is a happy dog, a more confident dog than she was. She's happy.
I love that story because I feel like you've both grown so much through the experience. So I think it's a wonderful rescue tale.
Yeah.
Where can listeners find out more about Leaf Animals?
They can find us on Facebook as Leaf Animals and Instagram as Leaf Animals as well. And email us on info@leafanimals.com.
Amazing. I'm so grateful for your time.
Thank you so much for letting me share Misa's story and everything.
Thank you, Amina.
Thank you so much, Nihal.